Okay, today there's a question, It occurred to me that most time, most of the time, one's response reflect the true nature of one's character, whereby spoken words or not affect we should be mindful about. What is your comment on this? Okay, I will take note of that question. Thanks for the question, Josh. Okay, you can start now. Can start the recording. Okay. Mommy say go and light the candle in a sense. Okay. Once again, very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Tuesday, 14 April 2020. We just about to complete our second phase of MCO. Tomorrow will be the beginning of the third phase, means the fifth and sixth week. So tomorrow onward, you need to be more careful. According to the police, they will not give you any more warning. You violate the MCO, they will straight away send you in a van to the police station. Then they will summon you and will ask you to go to court. It means remand order. You either admit guilt, then they fine you, pay the fine, or they will fix a date for you to have the hearing. So try to avoid all this. Otherwise, you'll get yourself into unnecessary problem. Then while you are called in, you may create more condition for COVID-19 to affect you. So all this is for Kayanamita to maybe pay attention to. Then whatever happened, don't argue with people. The most important thing is to maintain awareness and smile. Then tell them you are sorry. That's it. Then you have to observe whatever rules. Try not to do anything out of the ordinary during this time. Then once again, I'd like to wish you all a very healthy and peaceful lockdown period. So during this time, may you and your loved ones be blessed by the Triple Gem, and may the Triple Gem bring forth the understanding and the good condition for you to go through this lockdown period. This next 2 weeks, for those who are serious, you can benefit from it too. It is actually a very good condition or opportunity for you to test your cultivation, then develop the ability to be mindful throughout the day. Daily mindfulness, religious routine is very important. From there, you build up your daily mindfulness. And with your daily mindfulness, and during this lockdown period, you can constantly listen to Dhamma, reflect, contemplate, inquire, develop the initial wisdom born on the first and second turning. It will benefit you a lot. Then you can fulfill step 4 and step 5 of the Avijja Sutta. Once you have step 4 and step 5 of the Avijja Sutta, you are very near to enlightenment. Then once you have the understanding, the sense restraint, which is step 6, they will arise. Once you have sense restraint, you are incapable of breaking your precept. That is the criteria for you to become at least a sotapan. Then later on, the 3 type of right conduct, they will be the natural consequence, which is step 7. Then by then, your understanding, your daily mindfulness, your initial wisdom, they will all stabilize. After that, you go forth to develop step 8, which is cultivate the 4 foundation of mindfulness. you will progress very fast because you will understand the four foundation of mindfulness very differently, and you will develop good understanding. Then you start to see the seven factors of enlightenment keep on arising in you. Throughout the day, your spiritual faculty is already so stable. Then the enlightenment factor, the investigation of Dhamma, keep on arising. Then your faith strengthening. Then after that, all the understanding, they will unfold by themselves. These factors of enlightenment are the enlightenment mind state or factor that can condition enlightenment. And you can awaken. That is step nine. Seven factors of enlightenment is step nine. So when you see the factors of enlightenment arising, you will understand that you are on the right path. So your faith will be very strong. Otherwise, the enlightenment factor will be there. So once the enlightenment factor are there, step nine will bring about the enlightenment in the here and now, which is step 10. So the whole cultivation will become very clear to you. Okay. With that, maybe we will start our puja. Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, then virya, then we will mindfully commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Muni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Muni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Muni Pho. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Milabha. Namo Milabha. Namo Milabha. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panati Pata Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Adina Dana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Suvamiraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Sadhu Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Pajama. Betang Pajayani. Damang Pajayani. Sanghang Pajayani. Okay, you can be seated. Just relax yourself and maintain some form of awareness. Then we will invoke the power. We will chant the invocation to the devas. It's on page 6 of the chanting book. So I will chant and do the invocation. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which is heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakravalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhamang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuto Vija carana sampano sugato loka vido Anutaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang buto bhagavati Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipasiko opanayiko pajatang veditato vinohiti supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipano bhagavato savakasango Nyaya patipano bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipano bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chatari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo Anjali karaniyo Anuturang punya ketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Thank you. Then you just relax yourself, maintain some of our attention, and we will start. I will start off with a question. Just now there's a question by Joyce. So the question, my daughter will bring it out and show you on the screen. Okay, from Joyce at 8:28 just now. So she has this question. Brother Theo, it occurred to me that most of the time, one's response reflect the true nature of one's character, whereby spoken words may not in fact whereby spoken word may not, then how come didn't continue? Yeah, like that. A fact we should be mindful of, should be capital letter. This is a fact we should be mindful about. Okay, what is your comment on this? Okay, I think it's a very good question. So first of all, I would like to go through your question so that people understand. That word you use, true nature, some people may confuse it with our true mind, our true nature. So here, choice doesn't mean that one. True nature of one's character. So that word should be one sentence. Understand that? Means your character, basically. Means your conditioning. So your personality, your conditioning, your character and all those things. But they call it the word true nature. Means you basically, it's like that. Yeah. So you may say something whereby the spoken word may not be the thing that they are trying to refer to. So this refer to people who are not sincere, who don't have the understanding. So her question is, the theory occurred to me that most of the time, one's response reflect means your true character, not true nature. Your true or one's true character. Whereby spoken word may not reflect the actual meaning. This is a fact we should be mindful about. What is your comment on this? So it's a very good question. My advice, I won't call it comment, is if you can develop mindfulness of it as a cultivation, means it's good progress. Because if you are mindful, you are aware, then you will know whether you are sincere or not. Whether you are still following your old way, which is the conditioned mind. Yeah, because the conditioned mind is very habitual in his response. Yeah. Habitual in the sense that you have been doing it so often. Then you are acting according to your habits, which is a conditioning from your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. So this is how it manifests, even evil roots, even mental hindrances. They arise through heedless thinking, through habitual response. So heedlessness is conditioned by ignorance, delusion. Especially self-delusion. When there is this self-delusion, there is this egoic mind that the form and mind will cling on to, grasp onto, and hold on to, believing that there is a personality, there is an ego, they exist. So this personality and the ego will develop the evil roots. They will tend to have selfishness, greediness, possessiveness. Then they want to own things. They want to possess things. Then when they cannot get what they want, they react negatively. Then sometimes they become emotional, angry, unhappy. And things don't go your way or their way. So these are the response from the mind. Then when they cannot understand or when they project their thought, they develop fear, worry, anxiety. So fear, worry, anxiety will lead to restlessness of mind. So these are all the mental hindrances. And they are basically the evil root of delusion. When you are deluded without the right understanding, you don't have the right Dhamma understanding. You will have doubt, you will have fear, you will arise anxiety. Then sometimes develop suffering, sorrow and lamentation and all those things. So these are the conditioned mind state, the habitual tendency that heedless people keep on creating. They do it so often throughout the day until it becomes habitual. That's why habitual means they respond like mechanically, automatically. Sometimes they use the word like it is spontaneously, they just become like that. Because that is what you are. So you cannot act out of it. It will just come out. But there is another aspect where the cunning mind, where the thought come in and take over. So when the thought coming and take over, if it's not born of wisdom, they cannot arise the right thought. So what they will do is, they will go and use the memory, their views and opinion to think over it. So when you think over it, means you are actually doing some calculation at the back, understand? How can you avoid the situation? How can you benefit from it? So all this motive behind is what meditation is all about. You cannot see your mental intention behind all this scheming, planning, how to cheat, how to take advantage, how to deceive people, means you lack mindfulness. You lack understanding. You are not able to train yourself. If you have the mindfulness, and the understanding of the essential Dhamma or what constitutes evil and what are the mental hindrances and all those things, you will know how to develop the understanding and cultivate accordingly. Then you will know how to arise the appropriate forward effort to abandon the unwholesome thought, unwholesome speech or action that has already arisen. Then as you develop more and more skill, more and more understanding, stability of Dhamma understanding, as you straighten your view more and more through understanding the Dhamma deeper and deeper, especially the first and second turning wisdom. So this one will prepare your mind to have the initial wisdom. Then you will know how to act. Then you act according to understanding. That understanding, the spontaneous understanding, which is the initial wisdom, they will surface and prompt you. Like I used to explain, thing is just the way it is. Let things be. Then you won't move. You won't react. You won't blame. You don't create negativity or mind state. Then you can be at peace. The world is the world. People are just the way they are conditioned like that, things will. So you have to stabilize this understanding, wisdom, so that you can be at peace with every moment of life experience and every situation that you encounter with whatever that unfold or happen to the world or whoever you meet or encounter. So this is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about, understanding is all about. Then you will not behave like normal people. Normal people, they are very cunning, deceitful. They always think of advantage. So they will calculate behind. Then when the mind take over without wisdom, they develop more and more delusion. Just like the selfishness, the cunningness, the deceitfulness all come up. Then they try to take advantage of people. So this is how you should cultivate. As a cultivator, be mindful of the subtle mental intention behind. Be mindful of how this evil root, sometimes you may think you got no more, you have no more, but they can come back to the back door. In the sense that another thought will tell you that, oh, you are okay already. You already understood what the Buddha teach you or what Brother Teo say. Let things be, ma. But there is another thought that will come back and tell you through the back door. Don't worry about other things. You already let things be. So now you act, but you don't have the cultivation of the right view. leading to right thought, following Noble Eightfold Path. So you don't have the wisdom to act. You have knowledge which you heard. So you can quote me correctly. Brother Teo say, let things be, well, why you so capable? You already gone already. You're through the back door, he come back and tell you something else. Oh. So let things be doesn't mean you don't act. Let things be means you accept whatever that arises, because during that moment, that is the reality. Condition like that, things will like that. Then I will be at peace first with whatever situation. So when I am at peace, there is clarity. There is awareness. There is understanding. Then I inquire, how can I act so that I can resolve all this amicably without hurting anybody? How can I apply what I have learned, especially the Noble Eightfold Path? To right view, I have to arise the right understanding to deal with the situation. Then I have to arise the appropriate right thought so that I can speak in a very appropriate manner, so that I can have gentle, pleasant, and good appropriate speeches that can bring about harmony, understanding, that can make people feel good, then resolve it amicably. Then you also will know how to act, because right view will lead to right thought and right action, and also right speech. So these are the natural consequence of Noble Eightfold Path. From right view, it conditions right thought, right speech, right action through your understanding. There's an acting according to wisdom is very important. When you have wisdom, means you have right view. You will not go wrong. So when you act according to memory, which is not based on understanding or wisdom, then that action is problematic. You're acting according to memory. You have the understanding. You are mindful. You realize it's not true action. You know what is memory? I already explained earlier on. Memory are accumulation of experiences, good and bad, based on our views, opinion, conditioning that has all the negativity of mind state, the negative tendency, especially your scars of memory, your phobia, your insecurity, your unhappy past and all those things. So these are your memory, even your selfishness, what you have experienced in life. You have seen how people cheat you and how at times you yourself also cheat and deceive people. So all this is memory. So this, all this has evil root behind. So when you act according to your fear, your insecurity, your unhappiness, your delusion, that is not true action. That is wrong thought, wrong action, leading to all the suffering. That this is selfishness, emotional negativity, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. So the way you act is very important. You base on what? What is your basis for action, speech, and thought process? Without wisdom, the initial wisdom, especially the first and second turning wisdom, you can't act. You will act based on habits, habitual tendency, conditioning, views, and opinion. That's how your mind keep on stirring, reacting. Then you keep on creating duality, negativity of mind state. This is how entanglement comes about. This is how suffering comes to be. Okay, with that, I hope I have answered your question, Joyce. Now we can continue with the Heart Sutta. Okay, we are at page 23, chapter 4. Then lesson 4. Okay, we start with the 1.1. Emphasis on the previous lesson means we normally do a review of what we have done in the previous session. So the first review is emptiness or sunyata in Pali is a term frequently used by Mahayana tradition versus the term non-self or anatta nature or empty nature or existent in anatta in Pali, which is the equivalent term that is frequently used in the Theravada tradition. So this is to make sure the two traditions understand each other. Because a lot of Mahayana tradition or Mahayana practitioner, they like this word, emptiness. But they seldom use the word sunyata because they link it to Mandarin. Kong, everything also kong. So to them, they believe this understanding of emptiness or kong is very deep and very profound, more superior than the Theravada's understanding of anatta, which they mainly translate as non-self. But for those who really understand the Theravada teaching, when they penetrate the universal characteristics of anatta, they will understand non-self is just a small aspect of anatta. In fact, anatta, the meaning is very deep, very deep. It is actually, it encompasses sunyata, which is finally empty. Empty doesn't mean nothing exists. Anatta. Empty in the sense that is towards the end, there is no reality. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. They come and they go. You cannot hold, you cannot cling, you cannot like want to possess it or own it. You can't. Because it is not a permanent, unchanging entity. And that is the deep meaning. So when you understand that, that is anatta. It is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why your form and mind cannot be self, the Buddha said. If this is self, it will not tend towards suffering. If this is self, it will listen to you. But it doesn't. It goes the way of nature. When it gets sick, it don't have to ask permission from you. That's why it is non-self. Not no self, non-self. Yeah. No self means completely nothing. Yeah. But non-self means it's not a self, not a permanent and changing entity, but there is such thing as a form of mind. And yet this is subject to karma. Even though it's impermanent, if you attach, cling, it brings about suffering when you cannot get what you want. And because it's not a permanent unchanging entity, it is not self. It is non-self. That's why it's not you. You cannot like cling on to it, hold on to it and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. No, it cannot. But the form and mind is impermanent, dependent, originating, conditional, in a state of flux, continuously evolving, moving. Then finally, when the condition that supports its existence separate, it ceases to be. And you call it death. Death means what? Who died? What died? Nothing died. It's the consciousness that's separate from the form. Then the condition that animates the human being, no more, finished. That is what anatta is all about. Non-self. Impermanent, empty nature. And that deep meaning is sunyata. Basically, sunyata, emptiness, is empty nature of existence. All of existence, no reality. But towards the end, it's only memory. Like that song, Wang Si Zi Men Hui Yu Yi. It's whatever that you can recall that happened in life. You cannot deny it happened in life. But is it real? Like I asked the question. Since birth until now, we can never deny we have lived through that phase. But you can only recall through memory what happened. And memory, how real can memory be? In the world of Krishnamurti, what is memory? Memory is of the past, like the dead leaf, dry leaf, already dead and gone. So you can only recall through mind, memory, Hui Wei, memory. So how real can memory be? That's why it's empty, no reality. So Mahayana got a very good saying. When you understand all this, then this saying become meaningful. He said, when we come to this world, when we are born into this world, each and every one of us, we come empty-handed. Then when you leave this world, can you take along anything? You also leave the world empty. Then he asks you that question. For those who don't know Mandarin, I explain a bit. He said, if you come empty, you go empty, then why do you grieve in between over emptiness? Worry about this, worry about that, cling on to this, cling on to that, becoming so emotional, so full of sorrow and lamentation because of your delusion. Because the coming is empty. The going is also empty. Then in between, why do you grieve over emptiness? No meaning in that. That's why I use the word do also like that, don't do also like that. No different. Where everything is just dependent originating, condition arising, following nature's law. Like my teacher Ajahn Yan Thao said, only mighty nature rolling by, only nature's law coming and going. He know you, he know me. That's why there is no reality. All the story that you can maybe recall to memory are just story of people. Sorry. I have to mute my phone. Sorry. Somebody is trying to call. Okay. Now we come back to where we were. Or maybe I just pick up the call. It could be something urgent.
Hello? I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about the phone call. I just answered it. Because during this MCO period, my tenant, one of the tenants who rented my condo unit, he is very nice, a Malay gentleman, but very nice guy, Amiru. He called me and he apologized to me for paying the rental late. I said, you don't worry, under these circumstances, it's understandable. I said, the wife has already informed me. So he still say he has already got some money, but he is without job for the last 1 month plus. So he tried his best to pay me. So he will pay me in a few days time. Okay, we continue. Just now I finished emptiness, sunyata and anatta. Now we will go to point number two. Importance of understanding why our physical form and all external form can also be expressed as form is impermanent, brings about suffering when we deludedly cling on to it without understanding. And it's empty and anatta nature. If you can see this, you have wisdom. You are already wise. But if you cannot see this, then you need to develop more understanding. Cultivate, silent your mind until you awaken and understand all this. So I go through it again. It is very important to understand why our physical form and all external form can also be expressed as form is impermanent, brings about suffering when you deludedly cling onto it without understanding, means self-delusion, sakyadity. And also see its empty nature or anatta nature, which I already explained earlier on. That to understand it clearly, we must have the ability to see its manifestation via mind's perception. How do you bring the external form into mind? Through your aggregate of perception. When you perceive something, the external form enters the mind. That's how the mental form arises. And when the mental form arises, together with the four aggregates of mind, feeling, perception, sankhara, and vijnana, they form the five mental aggregates. That is the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. Yeah. So this part is very important. Huh? Form enters the mind through the sanya or perception aggregate. Yeah. So from this mind's perception, you will know clearly how you create the concept and the word to label the external form. So I will read over that sentence again so that you can have clear understanding. To understand it clearly, we must have the ability, means the mindfulness, to see its manifestation via mind's perception with clear mindfulness to recognize it as condition arising phenomenon. Yeah. Hence, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity that we can cling on to or hold on to as the I and the me, or own as the mind. Thus seeing it as empty, sunyata, or anatta, because it has no apparent reality. Also, a cultivator needs to develop the wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind. We are a clear and stable daily mindfulness cultivation. So if your mindfulness is very clear, then you will see form is external manifestation of mind. Do you remember? I always ask you this question, the block card analogy. Externally, the block card, when the parts come together, it performs a function, you give it a concept and a name. Then the block card arises already, condition arising, like real to you. The second question is, how do you know it's a block card? You have to perceive it through your mind, isn't it? Through your seeing consciousness, through memory. So this perception is mind. That's why form is external manifestation of mind. That form outside, where you label it, where you create the perception of it, it arises. That's why this mind arises through external form. So mind is actually external, form is actually external manifestation of mind. That's how you see it. But you have to see it in a meditation. You have to have a silent mind to be aware of that perception, that moment of perception. Otherwise, you cannot see. To you, it's knowledge. Because Brother Theo says so. Then you think it's logical. Oh yeah, how I know? I must have through memory, perceive it. But if you cannot see it, the understanding is not deep, not clear. But when you see it with a silent mind, when you can be at the moment of perception, at the moment of feeling and consciousness and activity of mind, sankhara movement, then that whole understanding becomes different. That's why mindfulness is very important. Sati, awareness is very important. If it has stabilized, it can be from moment to moment. It can just stay there, aware, finish. No movement at all, no word, nothing. Then when the word come out, you also aware. Then you know. That's how mind manifests. That's how the aggregate of sanya manifests. That's how perception label it and bring on the form into your mind. And when you give meaning, you are deceived by it, you become deluded. Because you attach, you cling. To you, it's real. You give meaning. You want to own it. You want to possess it. You want to control it. You want to have something to do with it. Because you think you own them. Or you think they belong to you, your loved one and all those things. Or somebody you don't like, you think that fellow is your enemy. So negative mind state will arise. So all this is through perception. Then When that thing you perceive, you don't have the understanding, you cling. When you cling, you stir your mind to like and dislike, your preference. The one that you like, you attach, you cling, you want to own it, you want to possess it. The one that you don't like, you try to push it away. That's why sensual desire and ego, the first two mental hindrances of mind, keep on arising with every moment of sense experience. That is the reason why that understanding of form is external manifestation of mind is very important. To see it in the meditation, to understand it very clearly. Then if you see it through the consciousness via your perception, then I ask you the second question. Is it real? Is the bullock cart real? It is only an image in your brain, isn't it? If you know science, it's inverted image. So how real can be that image? That's why mind make our day. They are not real. Externally already condition arising, causal phenomena. But how do you know it? Through your perception, which is just an image. It's even more unreal. Not even solid, not even tangible. So see that it is unreal. The unreality of form. Then only you can see beyond form. It's only the brain through its consciousness and image and memory and perception aggregate, cling and hold and give meaning. There is no reality. Everything is just empty. He no you, he no me. Everything is just dependent originating, condition arising. Not what you think. See that clearly so that you are not deluded, not deceived. So that form fail to have power over you. And when you have that wisdom and the understanding, the whole creation means the whole of this manifestation of form in the form of consciousness, they will collapse in front of you. Because form loses its power. So the external form that you perceive through consciousness, all your senses, where you see the unreality, the empty nature, it loses its power. It like collapses in front of you. And when it collapses, you develop the wisdom to see beyond form. That form has no more power over you. Then you can understand form is just form, no more meaning. But when you live life, it's different. When you live life, it exists for you to use. So make use of it. Do not be deluded by it. Do not be deceived by it. Like the mundane mind, use it to arise the appropriate right path, right speech, right action. So this is what Dhamma is all about. With right view, it conditions your right understanding that enable you to understand life and live life. Then you know how to use your form and mind. The form and mind is like a different tool for you. It comes through karmically conditioned for you to come to this existential world. Then use it. Don't attach and cling and be deluded by it or deceived by it. So when you use it, it's like a tool. It serves you. Use it correctly, appropriately, like a knife. Don't use it to harm yourself, hurt yourself, and make yourself miserable and hit out at others. That is the wrong way of using the tool. So your thought is the same, your physical body is the same. Like the Buddha said, right view will lead to right thought, right speech, right action. That's why thought depends on the user. If the user of thought has wisdom, that thought becomes useful, beautiful. That thought is wholesome because the user behind has wisdom. That's why without wisdom, thought will become wrong thought. That's how suffering comes to be. Negativity of karma comes about. So this understanding is very important. the use of the physical body and the thought is very important. So user means that form and mind must have wisdom. Then you will know how to act. You will know how to arise at appropriate right thought, right speech, right action, and right for effort, for right effort, and also the right way of living life means right living. That's how the cultivation should proceed. So user of thought and the physical body must have wisdom. That's why we must train our mind to be heedful, to be aware, to understand all this, then to insight into phenomena, to awaken to the universal characteristic. Then that wisdom will protect the form and mind. From then on, the form and mind that has the understanding will not be deceived or deluded anymore. So just now I completed the form. Once you understand form is unreal, means you can see form, then you can see the unreality of form, the empty nature of form, then you can see beyond form. Unless you can see the unreality and the empty nature, you cannot see beyond form, you cannot have the wisdom, you cannot insight into it, and you cannot awaken. That's why the three universal characteristics is very powerful. Then after that, your mindfulness has to grow in and become more and more stable, subtle, to see mind. Your mind is more difficult to see, like last Thursday, we went through. Mind is non-tangible, not solid. Mind is movement of sankhara and consciousness. More difficult to see. Unless you have mindfulness, you can't see. And they move so fast. Unless your mindfulness is very stable, sati is very stable, you cannot cope with mind, you cannot cope with life. So the daily mindfulness is not easy unless you have a very stable daily mindfulness. That's why you have to be ever mindful, the Buddha said. Then constantly meditating when you are under training. Then you apply the same understanding to develop the understanding of mind. Then you learn to see mind. Then the unreality of mind, the empty nature of mind. Then only you have the power to see beyond mind. The analogy that I give you is a human being. If you look at the form, you will be deceived, deluded. Your form divide and create a lot of confusion, argument, division. Once you look at the physical form, you identify this physical form, what happened? All the division born of all these words will come out and deceive you and complicate humanity, lead to argument. Like the word gender, male and female, they argue. Then the color of your skin, complexion, lead to race. So all these are form identification. Then you have young, middle age, old. All this will lead to discrimination. Then when you have the ability to look at that person, not at the form level, means you don't attach to what he wears and what his external appearances is, means you can see beyond form. When you see beyond form, what do you see? If you are a cultivator who has the mindfulness and the understanding, you will know he also has a mind. He also has that mundane mind, the consciousness inside. And then you realize we are no longer so different. But externally, it doesn't divide anymore. Means I don't have any problem with gender, with age, with race, with color, and all those things. In how you dress and all those things. Whether you are more affluence or noble or what, not important anymore. Well, I see beyond your physical appearances. Then I look at your mind. I look at what you are good at, your skill, your capability, your understanding. But that mind may not have the division of form. It also can create division. Why? Well, each and every one of us has a mundane mind that is full of views, opinion, and conditioning. our culture condition us, our tradition condition us, our belief system condition us, our education system condition us, our environment, our society, they all condition us. So we are different because everyone is different. Even our parents, our guardian, people who raise us, condition us, our friend, the social media, the newspaper in the past, the education that you go through, they all condition you. That's why everyone is different. Then we mold our views, opinion, and conditioning. Then with the bundle of memory, we act. And we think that is what we are. No, that is not you. That is your mundane mind. With its conditioning, views, opinion, memory, and all this. So when you are mindful, aware, you can see all this, then you realize we are still different. That's why the religious label, the belief system, still separate us. That's why humanity and mankind still argue. There is still war. You call yourself Asian, they call themselves American, European, African, Middle East. Then religion again come in, create all the division, confusion. That's why our world has so much problem. Then you blame each other, point finger. So how do we overcome all this? You have to educate the new generation of people. To see beyond form, then see beyond mind. When you see beyond form and beyond mind, then all your views, opinion, conditioning, beliefs is all gone in there. Then who are you? What are you? We are no longer so different. You have a nature, I have a nature. And this is a oneness nature. We are all together. All humanity is one. We all have the inner Buddha nature, the true nature. It is from there that all things arise. With that, there is no more division, no more problem. Then everything is just the way it is. They are just the way they are. We are through ignorant delusion. The mundane mind behave that way. They separate themselves and divide and created the religious labor belief system and say that they are what religion, what religion, what race, from which continent. So all this you have to see them with your mindfulness so that you are aware of how conflict arises, how argument arises, how attachment come to be, how the world become what it is. So when you understand clearly within all this movement and understanding, then you develop the wisdom. That's why self-knowledge is very important. When you understand yourself, you understand others, that they also have a mind. Then you can see through your mindfulness, sensitivity and awareness, how living beings that are still deluded without the wisdom, how they behave, how they react, and how they stir their mind and create all the unnecessary suffering and misery and problem for the world. If you have the understanding, there is no such thing as a problem. Problem only arise when you perceive a life situation with negativity without understanding. But when we understand, thing is just the way it is, not what you define. Problem according to you, because you perceive it in negativity, then you say it's a problem. But when you are in charge, you are in control with the authority, then you say no, no problem. Because it's nothing to do with you. So this is the selfish way of humanity. The activity of the mundane mind that is still deluded without wisdom. So Dhamma is to cultivate the mind, train the mind, develop the ability to be silent, mindful, aware, to observe, to see and understand all this and awaken. This is the real cultivation. Not all the book knowledge, not all the meditative experience, chase after this, chase after that. Then look for method, look for technique, look for the big name. Then get yourself gullibly attracted. thinking that by chasing after all this, you can awaken. You can also be like them. Please, yeah, don't be gullible anymore. Wake up. Everything is within. If you don't seek within through mindfulness, awareness, you cannot understand. Because it is the form and mind. The final summary is the form and mind. The Buddha said, if you deludedly grasp and cling onto this fine aggregate of form and mind, which he called upadana khandas, it will condition suffering. So develop the understanding of what this fine aggregate is, the two aspects that I have shared. Then check, put to test. If I attach to the form, do I suffer? If I attach to the aggregate of mind, vedana sanya sankaramiya, do I suffer? Go through it, investigate into it, awaken you. Then based on what I have shared with you and taught you, you will progress very far. You will awaken very far. But don't attach to my words. Understand it and silence your mind and just do. Follow the instruction. Don't add anything or subtract anything. Just do. Then you will understand. You will awaken. Don't be too eager to know. Don't try to know. Silence everything and let that awareness, nature, find out. Let it awaken. So that is what daily mindfulness is all about. So that's why I put up there. Also, a cultivator need to develop wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind. We are a clear and very stable daily mindfulness cultivation. Then form delusion can be very powerful. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind. Because form is much grosser, whereas mind is very subtle, where it's non-tangible. It's just an aggregate consciousness, image. However, with wisdom, born of the direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be. That's why you must develop the wisdom born of the direct seeing. Let the silent mind awaken. Then you will understand. Then you will develop the wisdom. Hence, with wisdom born of the direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. So direct seeing is very important. You can only have the direct seeing if your mind is silent. Oh, I almost forgot. I sent out the email today on Adam's transcript 6 months ago on the Thursday class, November 21st. That one you go through, very good. He almost do a full transcript. Then I edited. A lot of the thing today I share is inside there. Huh? Maybe I will send it out. Give me a minute. Okay, I have just sent out. You can have the Mahayanika there. You can view it. It is very long. I think 15 pages. Maybe later on, after the class only, you go and read through it. So the direct seeing is in the Krishnamurti code, where that night we study the Krishnamurti code. So I read to you the Krishnamurti code. Yes, J. Krishnamurti, code. Below is a very profound J. Krishnamurti daily code, which we will discuss tonight, means that night. Is there a way of seeing or observing thought without any control, without giving it continuity, but observe so that it ends? If thought continue, the mind is not quiet, Only when the mind is completely quiet is there the possibility of true perception. That is the direct see. The true perception is the pure perception, the direct see, the pure awareness before the knowing. That is how you cultivate. So for those who have done it, they will understand very clearly. That's why you ask a few of them whether song, they are elixir, they are in some of the kalimata. They understand, and there is so much joy. That's why this J. Krishnamurti code is very powerful, very profound, very deep. So you can understand, you will rejoice, and you will have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha, towards all those who have made all this possible. Okay, we continue. Huh? Yeah, at number four. So number four is definition of a samana. A samana is a renowned holy man in the robe, seriously cultivating the Buddha Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. He or she is also usually referred to as one who is already enlightened. The term is used as opposed to the term Brahmin, who studied the Vedas during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha. Yeah. That's why you look at that Acchamahabhuva spoke, a samana, he has described down there. To a samana, spiritual understanding is very important. Because without spiritual understanding, one cannot be free. One cannot understand the problem and realities of life and existence. There is a recently printed Dhamma book for free distribution by Wave, and the title of the book is Samana on the Life of Longta Mahabhuva. This is the book I was referring to. Our Kayamita Fund has also donated towards its printing for free distribution. Hence, we were given some copies of this book for free distribution by Wave. And anyone who is interested in having a copy can request it from Brother Theo. So I don't know, I still have any copy or not. That time we distributed most of it. Eh? Anyway, if you are interested, you check with me. I try to look for one for you. Essential understanding. In the recap, Brother Theo re-emphasized the following important Dhamma. The importance of understanding true emptiness is wonderful existence leading to our ability to live life meaningfully and to the fullest. So this one is very important. Eh? You have to develop the awakening to understand. When you understand the true Dhamma, which means you penetrated true emptiness, then life becomes wonderful, meaningful. That is the meaning of true emptiness, is wonderful existence. Okay. Then true blessing comes from our own cultivation. We are karmic inheritance and nothing else. That's the reason why the Buddha said we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. That is the fifth daily contemplation. So that one, you have to take care. When you take care of karma, karma take care of your life. That's a true blessing. Come from your own cultivation. We are your karmic inheritance. Do good, yes, good. Do evil, yes, evil. Whatever you cultivate, if it's wholesome, with understanding and wisdom, it becomes meritorious. So this will become your true blessing. But if you are heedless, you develop all the negativity of evil roots that leads to negativity of karma, then this karmic nature will fall. And you will suffer, you will become miserable. Every life you come, you are born of your karma, add to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of karma. You still don't want to take care of karma, then I wish you luck. You go and find out yourself. Don't blame others for your misery and unhappy life. Then number three, the importance of cultivating a very stable sati or mindfulness leading to heedfulness or apamada throughout the day is very, very important. This is most important. That's why you have to develop the sati, then stabilize it until it becomes very stable. Then it can become heedfulness. The heedfulness got two parts. Constantly meditative and ever mindful. Ever mindful means you have to train your mind, mundane mind, until it's mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. So that throughout the day, it has the ability to be aware. And that must be a free mind, not a conditioned mind. Not the one that is held in energy field, concentration, or jhana, or absorption. It must be a free mind. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation that will lead to enlightenment in the here and now. That is the fourth noble truth. Then note number four, importance of repentance and asking for forgiveness sincerely. This is very important. When you forgive someone, you actually free yourself from the evil roots of anger or hatred and delusion. So this asking for forgiveness and repentance is a very important aspect of cultivation, because your karma actually need this. Most human beings in the past, through heedlessness and delusion, committed a lot of karmic negativity. And this karmic negativity, when they surface, it can create karmic obstruction that are very strong. It can really obstruct that form of mind or human being from receiving help or having the condition to understand things and turn around. That's why it's called karmic obstruction. It obstructs you completely. But if you know how to sincerely ask for forgiveness, then develop the repentance and vow not to do it, then invoke power of merit after you have followed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, so that you will not violate all these precepts anymore. Then when you invoke the power of merit, in fact, before you invoke the power of merit, the moment you ask for forgiveness, the nature's law is very strange. It will straight away help you to clear the karmic obstruction. If you do it sincerely, once the karmic obstruction is clear, then my nature realized that person can develop understanding. He can receive help. But before that karmic obstruction is clear, no way, no matter what you try and what you do, can't means can't. Yeah, this is nature's law. Don't ask me how I know. My nature from the past already developed it. That's why this life I never learned from anybody, I never read from any book. But I can teach you this thing really works. And I have helped many, many people come out of very, very chronic karmic situation and problem. They suffered so much. There are quite a number who had this very severe karmic obstruction for so many years. You can't even talk to them. You can't even approach them. Then how are you going to help them? Can somebody close to them, their loved one, that has affinity with them? Could be parents, brother, sister, or close friend, or whatever. You have to do it sincerely initially on their behalf. Then after that, when the coming obstruction is gone, you can see them turn around. Turn around. Then after that, very easy. The understanding will actually bring forth the condition. Especially when you invoke power of merit after many months of cultivation, sincere repentance and all those things. So these four are very important advice to develop the cultivation. Okay, next part is Master Xuan Hua's unique birth and life history. Okay, I will go through this. On Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamed that an old lady wearing a patch robe and a string of beads appear to guide him. So a lot of people don't understand when you look at somebody, don't look at the external form, please. Unless you already have the wisdom, then you will not do that. But most people look at outward appearance. When you talk about Kuan Yin, they expect to see what? To see that halo in the back, the bright halo, or they call the enlightenment halo around the head there. The bright, beautiful Kuan Yin. They look for that type of Kuan Yin. And through experience, I can tell you, the real one, when they manifest, they are very simple. Like Shen Hua described, he dreamed of an old lady wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appear to guide him. And then the story continued. For my case, in the year 1986, when Kuan Yin's nature came with a message, it was again an old lady. Old lady. White hair, everything. And somehow there is a young lady, I think about 12 or 13 years old. I think. It was a marketplace, bright, full of activity and light. Then all of a sudden, this young lady shout out on, "Silver engineer, silver engineer." Nobody called me by that name in that dream. Then I realized something strange. Why call silver engineer? And she was running towards me in my direction. Then I look around me, nobody else acknowledged her. Then I look at her. She held my hand. And he said, "Come, come. My teacher wants to see you." So I went with her. Then I saw this old lady, you know, really old lady, hair in white and all that. Then, as usual, when I see old lady, I have this respect, gratitude. Then because the young girl say, "My teacher wants to see you," then I also know it's somebody with a cultivation, otherwise it wouldn't be her teacher. Then what happened was she held my hand with a smile. That smile was so radiant, so beautiful. Then he opened up my palm. The next thing he did, I straight away knew who she is. I saw her taking out that vase. That vase, the small flower vase that Kuan Yin always have together with the Xian Cao or the one. He poured it onto my palm in a straight line. The triple gem, three beautiful gems, one by one, on the hand, straight line. And tell me, you have to move fast, not much time left. Straight away, I awaken. I wake up, like I never sleep. The dream was so vivid, so clear. Then straight away, my nature knew it was Kuan Yin, and I pay my respect. With joy, with gratitude, I thank her. Then I took the advice. From that moment, 1986, I went all out to cultivate. And very strange, what happened was, immediately when I did that, when the message came, the teacher come, the guide come, the book come, everything come. 1986 was the year I met Master Xuan Hong. I took refuge, whole family under him. That was the first encounter with my very first Mahayana teacher. And at that time, I don't know Mahayana teaching. But I listened to his talk and I can understand what he said. Then after that, 2 over years later, Acharyantra came. Then after that, my second last teacher came. But in between, I met a lot of very famous Thai monks. Like Achan Buddha Dasa, Achan Mahaboa from Potan, and many other famous Thai monks. I met them in person, and they invited us in the Kutia. In between, I also met quite a number. Then the book come, the guide come, the teacher come, everything come. Then I went for retreat, meditation. Then I went for Katina. I traveled to visit my teacher for Katina, I will say. Then finally, after 1989, I didn't travel anymore. I didn't see anybody anymore until the last teacher appeared. I don't want to see him actually, but the condition keep on arising. For 7 times, it arises, the condition. Normally, 2 or 3 times I will meet him, but that time I don't need any more Dhamma. I already have the understanding. But the strange thing is, my nature tell me after the 6 times, I don't know who this person is. I must see him because my nature tell me that there is a reason. Otherwise, it won't happen so many times. So when I make the decision to see him on the 7 occasion, I really went up and see him. And the rest is history. I already mentioned that you went and listened to the older one. Yeah, after that, I went up to Kenning Highland. He stayed up there. Then with a wife and another Singapore friend. So when we met, a lot of things just happened. I have described them. You went and listened to the recording and whatever. I think it's also in the short notes. I mean, it's also in many places. I don't want to continue with the sharing there. Otherwise, I won't finish. So you go and find out yourself. The way I met him, the last teacher, the last guy, very beautiful. And the condition, everything that I used to explain because of my nature, what my nature vow. He came because of the vow. And after I met him, that whole thing manifest. Then I received what I supposed to receive. Then from there onward, actually, I don't need anybody else. But what he has helped me cut short my training for at least 10 to 15 years. If I have not met him, I would have taken at least another 10 to 15 years to find out for myself what that gateway is to my true nature. But because of him, I save a lot of time. And he showed it to me and I detected it straight away. Then immediately after that, I understood what that gateway is, what that nature is. Then my whole mind transformed. Okay, I will read on. So always remember, don't look at external form. Don't look at the title. Look for the virtue. Observe them. Be aware. Be mindful. Check. Like Xuanhua say, check. You have the ability to check. You observe them and check very easy. First, are they egoic? Do they want your money? These are the few things. Very easy to check. Do they really have the teaching? Can they really teach and share? Do they have the understanding? Do they have the compassion, the love? The quality of a awakening. So all this you can check. The embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path and others. If you are observant, if you know how to check all this, then you won't go wrong. You won't be gullible. Otherwise, you will become gullible because you listen to what people say and you can get yourself conditioned by it. So you out of greed because you heard this fantastic name, nickname, and all that. Wow, they are supposed to be what they have, what. So that one, I leave it to you. You have to develop the understanding yourself and find out on your own. Otherwise, you can be trapped. So don't look for the outward appearances. This will not help you. Look for the true quality in that individual. Whoever that has the truth, the understanding, will have the virtue, the sincerity, the understanding. Then most of them are very humble. They have a lot of humility. They are very humble. So that's why if you expect to meet Kuan Yin, or Wen Su Kusa, or all these great beings, nature. Sometimes, like Wen Su, you remember? He always come in a beggar form, very haggard. So, do not look down upon old lady, beggar, and all those things. You never know what their nature is. So, develop the understanding and be wise. Do not be gullible. Don't be influenced and affected by the external form, by what you see. Feel through your mindfulness, awareness, and understanding. Develop the wisdom to understand all these things. Okay, I'll go on. This unique birth and life history of Master Xuanhe provided the condition for Brother Teo to also share a bit of his unique spiritual affinity and encounter with Kuan Yin Bodhisattva in his early years of cultivation. Oh, I share it here. You are lucky. And the details are as described by him during the sharing on that day. For detail, please refer to the web link. Oh, that 16 gig USB that contain the recording as produced by Suyang. Yeah, it's inside that USB. That 16 gig one, I remember. Oh, very well recorded that one. And you go and listen if you want to know. In 1986, Brother Teo and his whole family took refuge under Master Xuanhe. And apart from that, apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish the 10,000 bow of reciting Namo Bun Si Si Jia Moni Fo, means homage to thee, my original teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, within 3 months. But Brother Teo completed it within less than 2 months. According to Brother Teo, this bowing is done mindfully and with very strong faith of Sada and Virya for the spiritual zeal, can lead one to develop the very stable daily mindfulness very quickly. That's why do the bowing. Body and mind move as one. Don't try to know. Don't ask any question. Just bow. Bow until the sati come. Your form and mind will know. You will know what sati is that time. Body and mind move as one without word one. The complete silent mind just one. Then you will know what sati is. That's why I can explain to you what sati is. I saw it when it came. When it's developed, it's very beautiful. Okay. The question, next one. Is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? The understanding of it is very important. That's why, even though it's a very good question, your understanding is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instruction blindly or without understanding. You must understand why you bow and what you are doing in the name of meditation. That is, do not just follow the instruction to do certain thing via any method or technique, etc., thinking that when you are doing all that, then you are meditating. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha cannot begin unless one has developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. So the various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various method and technique of meditation are only initial skillful means used to train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought. Most of the time, the main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind to it so that one is always in the moment mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, the trained mind is silent without thought with awareness within, and such a mind is in the meditative state to see things as they are without any concept, ideas, or words. So this is what mindfulness is all about. Mindfulness is a silent mind, just aware, without words, before the knowing, before perception. Unless your mind is trained, unless you are mindful, you cannot stabilize it to be ever mindful. And if you are not able to be in the state of ever mindful, daily mindfulness in the midst of life, there is no way you can be heedful. Just to be heedful, you have to be ever mindful and constantly meditating. Use that trained mind to develop the ability to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. That is what heedfulness is all about. The other thing about this mindfulness is you must train it in the form of meditation until mind enters sati. That's why I say continue to relax, maintain awareness, silence the mind. Or when you do bowing, walking, or whatever, do it until the sati comes. When the sati comes, your mind is in sati. Means your mind has entered sati. So whether it's in the form of meditation, or you are walking, bowing, daily mindfulness, or whatever, or chanting, you do until the sati comes, until the mind enters sati, until the awareness and the chanting become one, until the awareness and the walking become one, until the awareness and the bowing become one. Unless your mind enters sati, you cannot understand what my sharing is going to be like. Because all this comes from the silent mind, from the stability of daily mindfulness and awareness. Without all this, you cannot see. You cannot insight into phenomena. You cannot understand. You are like blind. It's like cultivating sati and stabilizing it until the mind enters sati is very important. Okay, I read on. When the mind, when the above is understood, then any method or technique can also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially. But finally, we need to develop the ultimate meditative mind with silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling, as per the Diamond Sutta. Then one must let go of all the object of meditation and silence one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It is just like swimming. The float is just like an initial skillful means, which is the object of meditation, to help keep you afloat. And as long as you hold on, you still hold on to the float, then you will never understand the actual swimming. Next page. Because to swim with the float and without the float are two totally different experiences. Bowing or reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious actions, and it is also a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practices as recommended by the Buddha to help one stabilize the faith of Sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual zeal or virya and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. One can then bow mindfully and with understanding via a composed mind with strong sadha and virya. So that is how bowing is to be done. With faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully. Do it mindfully. With body and mind as one. Just bow until the mind enters sati. Bowing is not ideal worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation done out of great respect and gratitude for someone who had taught you so well, like the Buddha, who is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. Since it's a meritorious action, the field of merit is immeasurable if it's done with understanding to the worthy one or the enlightened one. Such merits can be made use of to arise the causes and conditions for us to progress quickly along the path of Dhamma. We are invoking the power of merits. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculty of Sadha, Virya, and Sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, four things grow if you pay respect sincerely to all your elders and worthy ones. That is ayuk, wana, sukang, and palang. You always hear this when the monk chant and give you a blessing. They wish you have these four things. Ayuk is long life, wana is fair complexion, sukang is happiness, palang is strength, both spiritual and physical strength. All these four blessings are very important for having the good life. Okay, next question. Can you show us how to do the bowing? I have shown them before in the retreat. You can just do the normal bow, the 5-point prostration. Or you can do the Mahayana one also, okay, but the one is slower. The Mahayana one, but to stand up. Then go down, bow, then open your hand, and leave your head up and all those things. So either one, whatever that suits you, is up to you. No hard and fast rule. So the question is, can you show us how to do the bowing? Is it the Theravada tradition's 5-point prostration or the Mahayana's way, standing up, then go down to prostrate and come up again? Whichever way that suits you more, use it. The most important thing is when you bow, do it mindfully. So the key word is be mindful, with very strong faith and virya, and do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful with the moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought. Hence, heedless means you think. There's a lot of thinking. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one, in perfect harmony without thought. When the mind is composed and without the 5 mental hindrance, mindfulness will be there naturally. So develop the faith, compose the mind, chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha, and then bow mindfully to develop the sati of mindfulness within. After a while, if you are sincere, patient, and doing it with understanding, then it can bring about the condition for sati or mindfulness to arise. Mindfulness arises through understanding and perseverance. And when mindfulness is firmly established, there will be so much joy in your heart. The mind is so silent, so light, so composed, so still, yet fully aware throughout the day. You can reach this. I will congratulate you. I will sadhu to you. My nature will rejoice. Yeah, you will definitely become enlightened. In every movement and every action, there is much, so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are, and direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. Things that are there all this while is 3 universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta, etc., which the normal living being never see. Suddenly, is everywhere in the midst of light and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. That is the beauty, that is the marvel of daily mindfulness. When you have that developed, stabilized, it can have this ability. That's why you know you are destined for enlightenment. Well, it keeps on awakening you. Yes, just like what I described just now, earlier. That thing which the normal people cannot see, you start to see. Then the mind is so silent, so light, so composed, so still, yet fully aware throughout the day. Then in every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are, and direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. Means you see through. You awaken, keep on arising. This is the part. Things that are there all this world is 3 universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta, etc., which the normal living being never sees, suddenly become very clear. This is the reason why Bhagavad always said, Tukra Kayamita, truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Okay, we end here because it's getting late already. 10:14, almost 10:15 already. Okay, at least we stop here. So we bowing. We finish bowing here. Now, okay. So we start at page 27, 2.4. Okay. Now you can ask question if you have any. Now it's Q&A. I will have a drink. Then you all can just on your speaker if you want to ask question or share anything. Or give whatever comment. Okay.
Anybody?
Yeah, anybody? You can raise your hand, or you wait. There's a command in your Zoom. Anybody? Where is Joyce? Joyce? Did I answer your question? Did I answer your question? Oh, good. Your speaker is not on. We can on for you. Yeah. You can unmute Joyce. Okay, unmute already. You can speak. Yeah, Joyce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So you go through the answer again. You will develop good understanding. Yeah. That is how you train, actually. Yeah. You can be mindful of all this. They call it self-knowledge. How you actually behave while you go through life, in the midst of life. So when you can see all this through mindfulness, you can see your own delusion, your own selfishness, your own subtle mental intention behind. Then you realize, what are you doing? It is still the conditioning, the habitual tendency, the views and the opinion. Not until you have the stability of wisdom, the Dhamma understanding.
I happen to own notes. Can you hear me very clear?
I can, yes. Yeah, you continue. Yeah, continue, yes. Yeah. Yeah, you can continue. You can't hear. How come?
Can you hear me very clear?
I can hear you, yeah. I can hear you. You can hear me?
Yeah.
The question is what?
No, the question that was put forth earlier came about when I was looking through some of my old footnotes.
Sadhu. Very good. Yeah. That's why at that time you go through that phase. Yeah, good.
Actually, when I probe that question forward, I also have some form of an answer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I think it's too long to share. I actually wrote it down in my journal. So
okay. So next time you can read it, no problem. Very good. Yeah. So all this understanding is very important, because when you have developed the mindfulness, you can see them. You can see them. Then you will come to realize that all these are your habitual tendency, your so-called, in the words of Joyce, your true character. Don't use the word nature, otherwise you will confuse. So your true character means your conditioning before you know the Dhamma. So the real cultivation is when you see all this, develop the understanding, straighten your view, then one day you realize all this wrong view already rooted out. Then initially it's like that. You have the understanding already. But when you experience a sense experience again, you realize this habitual tendency come back very fast. That is habitual. Then it wants to move and stir like last time. But now, because of your wisdom, initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, then it straight away prompt you and tell you, no, this is habitual tendency. This one will lead to negativity or mind state. This is the old way. Now the mindfulness take over. Now you decide, not the thought anymore, not the conditioning. Then after you do it for a while, when your understanding becomes very stable, then one day you realize the habitual tendency cannot arise already, cannot move already. Then you realize whatever happened, you just laugh, smile, quiet, peaceful. Then you have rooted it up. You will know. That's why all this cultivation, like the Buddha said, the Dhamma is Pachetang. Pachetang means can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Means the person who go through this training, the understanding is there, and they will know what this thing is. That's why they can understand it. So the Buddha, when he mentioned the Dhamma is Pachetang, is true. It can only be understood by the wise, each for themselves. That's why this Dhamma is Pachetang. So find out for yourself. Investigate yourself. Check. When you have mindfulness, you can investigate into all this. You can observe all this. These are the stages where cultivator will go through. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Sadhu. Thank you. Joyce, for that question.
The second part of it is actually
yeah.
I wrote in the journal is quite similar to what you have just spoken about, the condition and the unconditioned in terms of character. So yeah, thank you very much. Very helpful.
Anybody else? Anybody? You either on your speaker and come in, or you wave your hand. Then we try to recognize you. Or we try to zoom into you. Ananda, okay. Yeah, Ananda, yes. Sadhu, yeah.
Not too important, just one word of that definition, but I would like to understand, this word samana, generally, was it towards arahant? Because it's actually stated like they are already enlightened.
I mentioned it is normally used for enlightened being.
Yeah, so...
Because during the Buddha's time, he differentiated a samana from a brahmin. A brahmin may not be enlightened, but a samana is an enlightened being. That's why they have this Pali word, samana.
But because in Pali word there's sangha also that learns Buddha Dhamma, but they are not enlightened yet, so called, should we?
It's exactly like the word sangha, understand? Wait, I will explain. Okay. What is a sangha? The actual definition is the order of the monk. You understand? So a sangha member is an order of the monk. Means when you are renounced with the robe on, you are part of the sangha. So they call you a sangha member. But when you chant the triple gem, Buddha, Dhamma, and the sangha, these are the triple gem. So the sangha under the triple gem are the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So both words are sangha. So if you are the enlightened one, then you are part of the triple gem. Do you understand?
Oh.
But if you are still not enlightened, you are not part of the triple gem. Then the other deeper meaning is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha is actually part of the Aryan Sangha. They may not be the one in the room, but they are enlightened disciple of the Buddha. They also form part of this Aryan Sangha. Because the triple gem means all these three can give you the Dhamma. That's why it's called the triple gem. They are real gem. You meet the Buddha, he is a Sammasambuddha awakened, he should have the teaching, the Dhamma. Then the second aspect of the Triple Gem is the Dhamma itself, that truth that the Buddha proclaimed and explained and expounded. That itself is the truth. The Dhamma is that. Then the third one, when you take refuge to the Sangha, the third one is the Aryan Sangha, is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. If you are not enlightened, you cannot have the teaching, the truth, the understanding. That's why the third gem has to be the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. And this enlightened disciple of the Buddha, the Sangha, normally they refer to those that are ordained with the rope. But that third Sangha, the meaning, the refuge that we take, are the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Whether in the rope or not in the rope, they are part of the Aryan Sangha. Okay? Yeah. So hopefully with that, you can understand better. Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question. Anybody else? We have another 5 minutes before 10:30. Anybody? As usual, everybody is so quiet. Is it clear, the sharing today? Yeah, most of them muted. Never mind. Okay, if you don't have any question, then maybe we can end. We will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits, then you can invoke power of merits, and we also invoke the blessing for whole nation. Okay, let us compose our mind. Recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours or so. Then we would like to share all these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang namoditwa chirang rakantu loka sasana itta watta cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo deo satukalena sasa sampati hetu cha Vito bhavatu loko cha Raja bhavatu dhammiko Imina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yava nivana patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay. Do pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you so much.
I hope you can stop the recording.